We're proud to be sponsored by MyFlex Learning. MyFlex Learning is a scheduling platform that helps middle and high schools meet the individual needs of all students. Schools can easily create and manage time for flex blocks, win time, activity periods, RTI, counselor and teacher appointments, and much more. And with its built-in accountability tool and reporting features, MyFlex Learning solves your challenges around getting kids where they need to be and understanding how flex time is spent. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.
People are expecting. People are expecting quite a bit.
This is your time.
You want to win? You're going to be like this.
There are no shortcuts in life.
You'll get better because you make each other better.
The inches we need are everywhere around us.
I know plenty of people that are capable. I know fewer people that are willing.
You have to believe it to do it.
Now, what are you going to do?
Welcome in, everybody, to another episode of Sideline Sessions here on B Podcast Network. Thanks, as always, for being with us. And this is going to be another great conversation here. We're going to be talking mental management and parenting and things that, of course, cross over into coaching young athletes of all kind of different competitions, all ages. So I think it'll be valuable to all of you out there. My guest today is Heather Sumlin. Heather is owner of Sumlin Solutions. Her company specializes in helping women reach their potential in sport, competition, and in life. Heather is a master level mental management certified coach trained personally by the founder of mental management, Olympic champion Lanny Basham, who is also her father. And Heather is a mental coach for a variety of different sports and performance areas like stage performance, pageantry, dog sports, gymnastics, bowling, and more. And so we're going to get into all kinds of things here. Heather, it's a pleasure to have you here.
It's nice to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
Yeah, let's start here. What is mental management? What are we talking about here?
So I'll give you the backstory. My father was slow, short, and uncoordinated when he was in school. And he was the last kid picked on any team, right? And so you wouldn't have thought that he would become an Olympic champion one day, but he did. He found a sport that would take a slow, short, uncoordinated person to the Olympics. It was rifle shooting. So his first trip to the Olympics, he was technically really, really good. He was made the Olympic team, and his teammate was the current world champion at the time. And my father's scores were in line with his. So he gets to the Olympics, and my father had a mental meltdown. And so even though he was capable of winning gold, he came home defeated. And he wanted to find out secrets to mental control. He interviewed Olympic champions to find out what they were doing differently about the mental game, created mental management based on that research, upgraded to it, and then dominated his sport. So mental management is based on his research and the things that he did, and he applied personally to become the world's best in his sport. And since 1977, after he won the Olympics in 76, he started this company, Mental Management Systems, and has been teaching people across the globe how to control their mind under pressure for competition. And it seems to work in all aspects of life, not just shooting sports, which is where he was utilizing it personally, but it applies to almost everything that we do, which that's what intrigued me because I wasn't interested in shooting. I was interested in other things. Right. But it applies to everything that we do. So that's like the short version of a long story.
Sure. And, you know, in so many ways, sport ends up being kind of representative as a metaphor for life, right? But, you know, it is true, right, that being able to kind of control your mind when under pressure, clear how the pressure element of that applies to sporting competitions and particularly high level ones. And, you know, this is discussed with respect to business settings as well. But for kids, and this could be younger kids or teenagers, right? There also could be elements, I presume, when we talk about their overall development, right? How there's certain things that kids are learning life skills via their participation in sports or other types of events and activities, but that's certainly being able to perform under pressure and different ways of managing oneself when under pressure. You know, adolescents feel pressure in a lot of ways. So, you know, are there other ways that this seems to come up a lot when we're talking to young athletes, but young people first and foremost?
Absolutely. I think we are constantly competing for something. Mm-hmm. So whether it's a spot on the team, whether it's a role in the school play, whether it's grades, we're competing all the time. So being able to control your mind under pressure is vital to success in life.
And now a quick break for a word from our sponsor, MyFlex Learning. Let's talk about flex time in schools. The potential benefits to our students make it totally worth exploring. There's more time for personalized learning, increased choice and agency for students, and the increased engagement that comes along with it, dedicated time for intervention, and overall, as school leaders, it provides you and your faculty more tools to increase academic achievement. But the implementation and management of flex time can be a challenge. Tricky logistics and a lack of clear accountability systems can prevent teachers from buying in. It can hold you back from ensuring students make good use of their time. That's why I'm pleased to share that MyFlex Learning provides a solution to these challenges and more. MyFlex Learning helps you create and manage flexible time for any purpose. And with the seamless SIS integration, a student locator, flexible daily rostering, and intuitive mobile app, it eliminates the common challenges of implementation and management. If you want to see for yourself, visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off the first year of use. That's myflexlearning.com/BE. You'll learn all about MyFlex Learning, what it can do for your school, and you'll receive a $500 off offer for your first year. Check it out. So, you know, via your story, you shared how your father first discovered this firsthand experience and then researching it further and kind of putting together his system. So that's one illustration of how better mental management was, supportive in his success in his sport. Are there general ways to explain, I guess, in particular, you know, even how this is important consistently in sport and important to maybe pursue some knowledge of this proactively, like that it's a good thing for every young athlete and their parents and or coaches to know something about, versus that it's only something that comes into play after, you know, we've quote unquote cracked under the pressure or whatever, but understanding that pressure will always be a part of those competitions. So kind of what does that introduction look like, or that overall view into why this is important in sport in general?
Well, I think it's important to start working on the mental game early. And I think a lot of times we miss that. We wait until we haven't reached our goal before we try to figure out how to control our thoughts. And if we can implement mental management sooner, then we can have success faster. So that's one of the things that we've noticed. And so to give you a little bit more information on what mental management is, we believe that the mental game, you know, results or performance is the function of three mental processes. You have your thoughts, which is your conscious mind, your skills, which is your subconscious. That's how well you prepare. And then your self-image. Your self-image is your habits and your attitudes. So when you're balanced in all of those areas, good performance seems easy. So you need to be able to be balanced in those areas. So our job is to be able to help you determine what should those thoughts be while you're developing the skill, and how can you build that self-image, that belief, if you will, so that you can perform and access the potential that you actually have. So you have all this skill that you've created through deliberate practice, right? You've worked with your team, you've worked with the coaches, you've developed skill, but sometimes you're not accessing that skill when it matters. And that could be because you actually haven't grown your self-image, so you don't believe that you're as skilled as you actually are, and you're only going to access the amount of skill that you believe you possess. So we have to build belief at the same time we're building skill. And most coaches and parents aren't equipped on how to do that. And so that's our job, is to be able to help coaches, parents, and athletes, performers, competitors, business professionals understand how to do that.
Yeah. What might some of those conversations look like around building self-image and helping, you know, helping an athlete do that?
Well, one thing to think about is your self-image is built up or torn down based on imprints. So imprints is what happens around you would be an imprint. What actually happens to you is an imprint. What you tell yourself, what you think about, talk about, write about, all create imprints on your self-image. If an imprint is positive, self-image grows. If it's negative, self-image shrinks. So let's think about an athlete after a poor performance. Are they positive or are they negative typically? Possibly more negative. Well, if that's the case, possibly more negative. If that's the case, then their self-image is shrinking with every negative thought. Mm-hmm. Well, the parent or the coach has an opportunity to kind of interfere here, right? Potentially, depending on if we have access to the athlete, where we can change the course of that conversation. So one thing that parents need to realize, because I know some of your listeners might be parents of kids who are participating, maybe collegiate, high school, or young athletes. Mm-hmm. When that kid gets in the car after a game or after a practice, the first question most parents ask is, how'd you do? How'd it go? Well, it's right. Open-ended question. If they didn't have a great practice, and I know this, I had a competitive cheerleader as a daughter for 10 years. And when she hadn't had a good practice, the first thought on the mind is all of the things that went wrong and all the things I didn't like and all of the reasons why I failed today. And that's what they initially want to talk about. So you have to change the conversation by changing the way that you ask your questions. Instead of giving them an open-ended question where we can go negative, change the direction of the question. So what was your favorite part of practice today? What went well? What did you learn? All of those types of questions lead to positive imprints because the conversation becomes positive.
Right.
So it's one example of a way that a parent or potentially a coach could change the way that they communicate with their athlete that might help them build self-image instead of tear it down.
Yeah. I'm curious, is there, I guess, an element of teaching and approaching mental management that relates to the athlete's perception of what other people perceive around them, right? So we're talking about the self-image, but also, for example, I think, you know, anybody who's familiar with sports, and especially if you follow, you know, college, professional sports, et cetera, almost any time an athlete is faced with performing in a high stakes situation, if they, you know, fail to achieve whatever they're meant to achieve in that moment, it's typically attributed to, oh, well, they couldn't come through under pressure, which could be, you know, could be true or it could not be, right? Because sports are hard. So sometimes mm-hmm. you may be controlling, you know, yourself quite well and still you're unsuccessful. You don't make the shot. You hit a bad putt, whatever the case may be, right? But does that play into the athletes, you know, even if they're not necessarily feeling like they are unable to control their mind or that they're placing all that pressure on themselves, if they think that everybody else believes that they can or can't handle pressure, is that sort of something that's discussed?
Well, everything that you think about, talk about, write about, imprints, right? So if you're hyper-focused on what the world thinks to be true about you or what the media thinks to be true about you or what other people or your social media following thinks to be true about you, then yes, that's obviously going to impact. But I think most elite competitors care very little about what strangers believe to be true and care a lot more about what they know to be true. And when we're looking at younger athletes, I think what would be valuable is to pay attention to what are the people doing that are where you want to go. Are they worrying about the things that are outside of their control? Or are they focusing on what they can do in order to improve? So one thing that I'll ask clients to do, especially younger athletes, I want you to think about, where do you want to go in the sport? Like, what is your ultimate goal? If it's the Olympics, if it's professional sports, if it's college, scholarship, whatever. Think about where you want to go. Now I want you to picture, who is a person that's already there that you admire? And they probably have somebody. They look up to someone already. Great. What are the habits and attitudes of that person? And I bet you they're pretty much controlled. I bet you they're pretty positive. I bet they're pretty, they deliberately practice and train. That's where we're headed. So someone who is pulled by what the environment is giving them, because that's an environmental imprint, the media, other people, social media comments, all that's all environmental distractions. If you're pulled by that, then your mental game is a variable. Mm-hmm. And that's dangerous. You want your mental game to be a constant. You want to be consistent in the way that you think. And if you're going to be a champion, you're going to be pretty consistent.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I'm also sure that as you're navigating this over the, you know, the course of an athlete's development, that the mental aspects and the self-image, it's part of it is aspirational and saying, okay, what's the image we want to have of ourselves? But that doesn't mean that it's not also representative of reality, right? That sometimes if you're entering a competition and you're feeling like, oh, I'm not prepared for this, it could be that it's a mental management concern, and we need to, you know, work on that and build the habits and beliefs that really represent the preparation that you did have. Sometimes it might mean
you really didn't
prepare. Maybe you didn't prepare, right? Yeah. Like, you know, which is the biggest, you know, huge thing with these athletes that perform well under pressure. It's because, right, they have done these things so many times that they don't have to think about the things that they don't have to think about, you know, the muscle memory, the routines, all of that stuff is so practiced that they can dedicate that those mental management resources to the other elements that maybe aren't present in practice. But of course, you know, important to say that's part of the conversation too, to say, okay, why are you feeling this? Let's figure, okay, well, I know for a fact that you are fully prepared, so let's work on building that self-image. Well, okay, in this case, maybe it's telling us, right, you are unprepared. And so that's something we need to work on instead. But just to, you know, for anybody who's listening, right, to contextualize that and say, yes, these are, it's all part of it, right? This, you could be the best at mental management. It doesn't mean that it's not still necessary to do everything else as well.
Well, that's why there's three mental processes, right? Mm-hmm. So we're talking about self-image, but if you don't have subconscious skill, you can't access what you don't know how to do.
Right.
And then your conscious mind needs to be controlled. You need to be thinking about things that are valuable to you. And then the thing that's interesting is, if you ask an athlete sometimes, someone who's inconsistent in competition, a lot of times you'll ask him, so are you thinking the same way in practice as you're thinking in competition? They're like, no. Mm-hmm. Like, well, why not? Well, because it's competition. Okay, but it's the same action. So your thoughts need to be consistent. So the way that you train needs to be duplicate. You're going to technically do the same thing. So why wouldn't you mentally do the same thing? Mm-hmm. Oh, there's more to think about. That doesn't mean you have to think about it. You need to have a consistent mental process that you can duplicate under pressure that leads to positive results. So it's being disciplined to be able to put into action the same thought processes. So my dad's thoughts in the Olympic Games was the same. Like in 1976, when he won the gold medal, he had a thought process that was consistent on every shot. 72, his thoughts were dependent on what's going on around him. Big difference. Now on paper, my dad won a silver medal in 1972. So people are like, wow, yeah, you were really good. He was, but the rest of the world just wasn't as competitive as the as the United States at that time in his sport. But in 76, he was controlled. In 74, he was controlled in the world championships. He won 15 medals at one world championships because he had a mental process that he ran on every single shot. And then everybody else is, you know, potentially worrying about what's going on around them. And our youth is consistently worried about what's going on around them or what's in that shiny little rectangle that they carry in their pocket. And they're worried about that.
Right. Yeah. And you know, in that sport, in particular, even for athletes who are involved in different sports, you know, it's a good illustration of something that clearly requires intense focus to be able to, and that you would have to consistently maintain that same level of focus in your practice and in your competition. And that, and you have to be able to, as best as you can, replicate the real conditions of the competition. And you know, and it's obvious how sometimes athletes can see this in themselves. Okay, in practice, are you doing what you can to replicate what the conditions are going to be? And, you know, and for coaches as well, to understand how those things apply both physically and mentally, right? If you are, if you want your basketball players to be able to make their free throws in the last minute of a close game, do you practice them the first thing in practice when everybody's fresh, and, or are you doing it at the end of sprints when everybody's exhausted and the pressure is either make these free throws or we're running again, or, you know, whatever those things are, to say, what can we do to make this like it actually will be when we're competing? Because otherwise it's, you know, even if you, again, that you could be focused, but just not truly practice, or vice versa, where you could be practicing these things in a situation where you're just not really putting that much effort and focus into it, and you're just sort of going through the motions. And then when it's time, when it really is hard, it's just not there because you don't possess that skill, as you said, in this case, the mental skill to be able to really block out everything but your objective, and ultimately, whether it's an individual sport or a team sport, once you get there, it is a competition, right? It's you against whoever else, and you're going to have to perform each of these things better than the other person or the other team is, or else you're not, you know, going to be able to get the result you likely want.
Yeah, but there's a time to think about outcome, which I think is also interesting. The time to think about outcome is in practice. That's when you're motivated to work really hard so that you can outwork the competition, make sure you have the skills. I agree with you. You better practice in all sorts of conditions, because the last thing you want to do is say, oh, you know, it's windy and it's rainy, I'm not going to practice today. Well, you could be competing in wind and rain. Like, you need to practice in all conditions if your sport requires you to compete in them. And, but when to think about outcome isn't the day of a competition. Because if you're focused on outcome, you're going to be pulled to overtry and to put more effort in that's required. And therefore, you're going to fall short of your potential. So then it's, no, we're going to focus on the process of executing what we need to do in the moment. We're not going to think too far ahead. The outcome will take care of itself. And I think a lot of athletes get that confused, maybe, or maybe they just don't think about it that way. They're like, man, we got to win. We're going to win. We're going to win. Okay, you need to implement the things necessary to be able to win, not just focus on winning only.
Right. Right. And I'm sure in the case of, you know, to reference your father again, right? There's, I mean, probably other smaller competitions in between, but for athletes that are at that level of their sport, when you think about Olympics, world, you know, Olympics are every 4 years, world championships are every four as well. But so there's 2 years in between each of those major competitions. 2 years is a long time, but the person who's going to want to be the absolute best at that is thinking every day about the outcome they want to get at that, you know, every day when they go to practice or train or whatever they're doing, they're thinking about, this is because I, when I get to that competition in 2 years, I want to have no regrets that I did. I performed my absolute best, and there's some things I can't control. If I do my absolute best and somebody else is better, okay, I can't do anything,
right,
about,
you can't do
that.
Anything about that.
Right. But I don't want to get there and say, oh, I could have, I know I could have done better had I prepared better, or had I been more focused on my outcomes and all of that. But maintaining that level of focus is not easy, right? For that amount of time, when you're trying, same thing for other sports. If your preseason starts a couple of months before the season, still a couple of months of every day saying, look, this might be the first day of practice and we might not have a game for 3 months, but what we do today is what prepares us for what we want to happen then. And we can't just flip a switch when we get there, or unless we're just, you know, so much more talented than the competition. But that's typically not the case.
It's not likely in an elite competition. Right. You're probably going to be that much better than everybody else that you could have rested.
Right. It's not super likely. Heather, is there a starting point or an introductory point for a parent who wants to learn more about this, wants to start to maybe have these discussions with their child? Maybe it's their, you know, their first kid that's getting to the point of participating in sports, right? So they haven't kind of had that experience before, and or it's a sport they're not super familiar with, right? But what are the first couple of things to look at or to kind of start to think about?
I think parents need to realize that they are their child's first and most important mental coach. So no matter who your child works with on the mental game or technical game, you are your child's first and most important mental coach, and you're probably not equipped to be so. So there's some resources that are available to you. My father wrote a couple of books that are really valuable that I think all parents of competitors should probably read. Parenting Champions is one of them by Lanny Basham. It's available on my site, heathersumlin.com. It's available on mentalmanagement.com or Amazon, whatever. So that's a good resource to be able to help equip you. But you have to understand that you're the one that your child is going to be listening to. You're the one who's going to set the tone for how they get out of the car to go to practice and how they come home from practice. You have more influence over their mental game than anyone else on the planet. And so recognizing that, believing that, and knowing that, and then equipping yourself to be able to handle it is good. His other book, With Winning in Mind, would be a great resource not only for you, but for your athlete as well, to be able to understand more about, I mean, we can only go over so much in a short interview, but those tools are very valuable. We also offer 20-minute evaluation calls. So if anybody's interested in learning more about, like, how do I get started, or what ideas do you have, or what's it like to work with you guys, I do a 20-minute free evaluation call. My brother, Troy Bash, and my dad, Lanny Bash, we all do. And so it's an opportunity for people who just want to learn, like, how do I apply these things, or what are the opportunities? Those are some things that they can do. The main thing is that your job as a parent is to build the self-image of your athlete, which means the way you communicate with them. If your words are leading to self-image damaging imprints, then you need to turn those imprints into something that's valuable. There's the principle of the picture. It's not important what we say. It's important what we cause ourselves and others to picture. What we cause ourselves or others to picture is critical. So you got to think about the picture that you're creating based on the words that you're giving, whether it's to your child, to yourself, to your colleague, to your spouse. Think about, is the picture that I am giving based on the words that I'm choosing the imprints that I want? And so it's important that we pay attention to the way that we communicate.
Yeah. And I've heard you talk before about parents essentially matching their child's level of passion about the sport when it comes to how do we support them? How do we talk about their the outcomes they want and their participation, or figure out the right ways to support them. Can you describe that a little bit, how parents can sort of assess and evaluate and take action on that?
Yeah, we have different participation levels. Mm-hmm. So we're either training to learn, which means we're just really interested in a sport. We're not passionate about it. We have no passion. We're just interested. So that's someone who's training to learn. We have training to compete. That's someone who's committed. I mean, I'm in maybe private lessons. I'm starting to compete, but I'm not training to win yet. Mm-hmm. Training to win means I am passionate. And you can kind of tell where your kid lands if they're interested, committed, or passionate. And what really is dangerous is when you have a parent who has a different participation level than their kid. If your kid is training to learn and you are training to win, that is a disservice to your kid. And I saw it often because my daughter was a competitive cheerleader. I don't know if you've ever been in a cheer gym when moms are watching cheer. Or even if you've ever watched, I don't know, Dance Moms or whatever, right?
Right.
You have many parents who are training to win. And their kid is obviously training to learn. And then they put this pressure and these expectations on their kid, which is unnecessary. But the opposite is also dangerous. When your kid is training to win and they really are passionate and you don't match that passion, that's also difficult for that kid. So you want to make sure you pay attention to where is your child's level of participation? What are they willing to give the sport, and match it as best you can? If they're passionate, do your best to be at the games, be at the practices, talk to them about it. Let them talk your ear off about it, even though you may not care about it. Mm-hmm. But match their passion as best you can. And that was one thing.
Yeah.
When I read Parenting Champions, because I hadn't really realized that until I read Parenting Champions. I was already a parent when my dad wrote that book. And I read it. And first of all, I said, "Hey, Dad, you violated some of these things." And he says, "Yeah, I know." And then he's like, "I'm sorry. I wrote this later in life." But then I'm reading it. I'm like, wow, I hadn't thought about how important that is until it's spelled out in front of me. Like, it's so incredibly true. And right. Have I, as a parent, violated that? Probably so. And I'm not going to do it again.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the second part of that in particular is interesting, because for a lot of listeners, they may have, at least, you know, even if they find it harder to put it into practice, heard, or it may be logical that the parent having a much, you know, higher level of passion about sport than the child is perhaps not the desired dynamic, but you know, the truth of the opposite as well, which doesn't necessarily get discussed as much in sports, I don't think, but I do think that the concept applies and is talked about in other realms, right? Basically, if you're a parent and you're showing that you don't care about the thing that your kid really cares about, that indicates to them something that's probably not positive. And it doesn't mean that everybody is a huge sports enthusiast or has a great knowledge of sports, but it's at least about saying, I know that this is something that you really care about, that you're really motivated by. And I don't need to be an expert in it, but I need to demonstrate that I want to support you in that pursuit, mm-hmm. and be present in the ways that I can, and help you in the, you know, in the ways that you also want to be helped, right? That to give child agency in that and say what's helpful, what's not. Sometimes the parent may have a level of expertise in that sport and with good intention may want to share that. But sometimes a kid just needs a parent, and sometimes they need a coach, and sometimes they need something else, yes. Right? If everybody's a coach all the time, that can be a little overwhelming, even for the most passionate athlete.
When sometimes your kid is going to listen better to someone who's not you. And it's not because you're not saying all the right things. It's not because you're not equipped to help them. It's because they're just not as open to what you're saying as they might be to someone else. Happens to me all the time. I could be in a session with a kid and a parent. I can use almost the exact same words. And the kid's like, oh my gosh, I've never heard that before. That's so true. And then the mom is like literally physically rolling her eyes. Like, seriously, I said this to you yesterday. And I'm like, you did? Like, they just don't always, especially if they're a teenager, right? So that we just kind of, we're ready to be maybe inspired, motivated, encouraged, and educated by someone else. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in one ear and out the other, sometimes when mom and dad talk, which I actually think they listen a lot more than we think that they do.
Right.
But they may be ready to receive from someone else.
Right. Which sometimes can, it can be a, you know, a case of, you know, adolescence and teenage years, but sometimes it can also be an indication of a kid who's pretty smart, who knows, like, their partiality is involved. And, you know, if I hear from an impartial source, somebody who doesn't particularly care if I'm a great athlete or the other kids are great,
right.
You know, they're just my, and they are telling me certain things that they believe I'm really good at, I can trust that that's likely true, because otherwise they wouldn't really have a motivation to tell me otherwise. And I appreciate my parents encouraging me, but I don't know if they would tell me if they thought I was no good. So, you know,
I can see that.
I need to hear it from somebody else too, right?
I can see that. Yeah.
And, you know, maybe that's like the first step of kind of media literacy and kind of saying, okay, who are my sources here and who do I know that doesn't have a bias?
That's like both of my kids have said at one point in time or another, yeah, but you have to love me. Like, you're mom, so you have to. Actually, I don't have to, but I do. But I'm also being honest. I mean, yeah, but like, when someone else says it, it definitely does resonate more, especially if it's a compliment or if it's praise.
Right.
I think that's so true.
What can parents do about navigating or reconciling when the child's, you know, passion level and ability level are misaligned? I guess most urgently, probably when they're highly passionate, but just really don't seem to have the ability. It could come into play in the reverse, but that might seem maybe a little less risky, I guess. But you tell me.
So when I was younger, I was really passionate about singing. Like, I wanted to be a professional entertainer. I thought that's what I was going to do with my future. And my mom chose to feed the passion. And I was not super gifted, like, at all. I've seen some of the videos. It was pretty remarkably difficult to listen to. And my mom's stance on it, which I thought was really good, was she would video me. She would stay out of it. She would let me be as passionate as possible. And she would hire people to help me as best they could and let the passion drive. And her philosophy, probably based on my dad's teaching and just from her own experiences growing up, was if you feed the passion, either they're going to develop the skill or they're going to learn something valuable that they need to know because there's a reason they're passionate about it. My father, unbeknownst to me, never said it to me, but he told her she should stop. Like, she should just stop. And my mom says, we are not squashing the passion. You know we can't. And I know you don't want to hear her when she's off and not in tune. Yeah. But ultimately, I did get better. I did become a better singer. And it led to scholarships and opportunities and things through pageantry that I wouldn't have had otherwise. Did I become a professional entertainer? No. But did I learn valuable skills that make me a better coach? Yes. Did I meet people, network with people, connect with people? Did it make my life better and enhance my future? Absolutely. So I think we need to not look at, okay, this child's not going to become a professional athlete. I can tell based on their skill level. That doesn't necessarily mean that we should squash the passion. Let's kind of wait it out a little bit and see what happens next. Now, don't let them be delusional, right? So like you've seen it on certain talent shows where, you know, a kid comes in and they think they're amazing because mom and dad told them they are and they're not. Okay, we don't want that. So praise where praise is warranted,
right?
But allow them to pursue the thing that they're really excited about and that they really want to do, but don't tell them they're better than they are. Provide the resources necessary to help them grow. And then maybe look at other avenues where maybe they can utilize the same skills in a place that might also benefit them, but maybe they can excel better. Hopefully that helps.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's certainly some lessons in there about where to focus kind of the praise, right? And looking for opportunities for growth versus just, you know, because you want it to be, when we talk about, you know, warranted praise and not when you were singing, gave a concert and, you know, your singing skills, you were enthusiastic, but they needed some work. And your mom told you, oh, it was the best thing I've ever heard in all my life. You know, that much.
No.
But if you said, how did you like the concert? And she said, you just look so cute up there. I love that shirt. You know, you might say, yeah, that has nothing to do with my singing, right? It has to be something that means something without being, you know, untrue, but still having some encouragement or focus on the growth. And I assume another part of this is ensuring that there aren't unreasonable expectations placed on this. For example, if your child, due to the relative effort they're putting into their football career versus their schoolwork, is such that they are banking everything on getting a scholarship to college, you know, and you're just like, there's no way you're getting it. You know, don't let that mm-hmm. happen.
Right.
Right. Your future is contingent upon this activity that I know you're unlikely, or there's certain, you know, sports or events where there you just don't have the, you know, you're too tall to be a gymnast, you're too mm-hmm. tiny to be a basketball player, whatever it is, certain things that it doesn't mean you shouldn't enjoy it and do it as best as you can and view it as something that is fun, but let's also not is one of the realities right now. It is, it's younger and younger because of how competitive everything is, with everything from college scholarships to, you know, elite academies to whatever, where there is an earlier and earlier pressure on determining, okay, but how are these kids going to do in these sports? And that's just the way it is. There's not much, trying to ignore it is probably not super helpful, but at the same time to say, okay, let's not pin our entire future on something that's not a good bet.
What's really interesting is when my dad came home, so in sixth grade, I think it was, they were studying the Olympics in school, and he said mm-hmm. that the teacher was talking about, you know, I wonder who'd have the best chance of winning an Olympic medal someday out of this class. And the kid sitting next to my dad said, well, I don't know who'd have the best chance, but I know for sure who'd have the worst chance, Lanny, and pointed out my father, because he was that slow, short, uncoordinated kid that just wasn't athletic. Well, he came home and told his mom, he's like, I'm going to the Olympics. And the thing is, she could have squashed that and said, well, oh, honey, that's so sweet. Like, no, but she didn't. She was like, okay, fine. You're going to need to figure out how. They didn't ever squash the dream.
Yeah.
Don't limit the dream of your kid. Does it mean that they're now, he wasn't going to go in any sport that required someone who was strong and fast and, you know, equipped like that. But there are other sports and other options. Right. And so he never let go of the dream. And then the vehicle presented itself, which is rifle shooting, which is the only sport you're trying to make the body stop instead of trying to make it go. And obviously he sat on the bench enough to know how to make the body stop. So he found the vehicle because the dream never died. Mm-hmm. And I think as parents, our job is to try to keep the dream alive and not squash the dream, because we don't know why the dream is there. And then let the kid believe until that door closes on them. And another door will open. But it could be the skills that they possess in the process make them a better athlete for a different sport or a different avenue. Or maybe they become a coach because they're really great and gifted and they know the sport in and out, and they become an amazing coach, but they could never be a professional. There's nothing wrong with that. So I think sometimes we're too quick to try to navigate for our kids where they need to go and what they need to do.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, intrinsic motivation is perhaps the most sustainable energy source on the planet, right? So finding a way to tap into that and to, you know, open up more opportunities, see what, you know, keep doing what you're doing, and let's also try this. Did you ever think right. about this and that? And there's so many other things out there that, right, like your first, most people's first image that comes to mind when they think about the Olympics is, you know, a few different sports, but there's mm-hmm. a whole variety of things that encompass a whole variety of skill sets and interests, and that's the same in all kinds of fields. There's a lot of different ways to make an impact in the field that you love, and it there's mm-hmm. not just one way to do it. And if you're highly motivated, there's nobody that can, you know, hopefully we'll take that away. It's very hard to right. get motivated to do something you don't care about, but it's very easy to stay motivated about things that you really love. And that's, you know, something that every parent, coach, individual can benefit from.
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. Well, Heather, it's been such a pleasure to have you here. And one thing I wanted to ask you before we go is you also host a podcast called She Wins. And some of our listeners may be interested in that. Would you like to tell them what you talk about on that show?
Yeah, She Wins, Solutions and Stories for Women. It's really a podcast dedicated to interviewing people that have inspired me. Maybe they're clients of mine. Maybe they're people that I've met along the way that I just think have something of value to share, whether it's a really great story, whether it's lessons, maybe they've been super successful in life and then they can impart some of that to other women. And I think we can learn from everybody. And so my goal is to just allow people to have an opportunity to share those stories and then learn from those people. And then I have a Patreon channel, She Wins Patreon, where there's a membership option and I do extended interviews with my guests. And then I add more content on mental management as well as interview skills. I work in pageantry. And so I do a lot of interview coaching as well. So I have all of those resources available on that Patreon channel for people who are interested in, you know, just kind of diving a little bit deeper than what's on the podcast alone. And the podcast is on YouTube. It's also on all podcast channels. And it's kind of a passion project of mine. I'm excited about it. And then of course I have the website, heathersumlin.com, where you can learn more about how to train with me.
Excellent. Well, yeah, it's been great to have you here. And listeners, some of these resources referenced in this interview, we have the books With Winning in Mind and Parenting Champions. We'll link below to both Heather's website, heathersumlin.com, and also mentalmanagement.com. You could find those books if you're interested at either of those sites. We'll also link to Heather's YouTube channel, social media, anything else people should check out.
Just if you're interested in learning more about the mental game, get started now. It's never too early and it's never too late to learn how to manage your mind. And anybody can benefit.
Excellent. Well, listeners, yeah, do check all of that out. And this is something that applies in all fields, all sports, all other types of fields. So certainly whoever is out there listening, this is something that can benefit you and the young people in your life as well. So please do check that out. Also, if you're not already, please subscribe to Sideline Sessions. We're going to continue bringing you all kinds of interviews with people involved in the sporting landscape in a variety of sports, variety of roles, all kinds of ideas and strategies to help you support the student athletes in your life. And if you're interested in learning more about our other 40 plus shows on the network, visit bpodcast.network to check that out. Heather, thanks again for being here.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
There are lots of solutions out there for giving students what they need when they need it. But when do they actually do all of those things? You need flexible time. When added into your master schedule, flex time enables students to get extra help or intervention, meet with teachers, make up work, get physical exercise, and try new enrichment offerings. If you're thinking of giving it a try, check out MyFlex Learning, which unlocks the benefits of flex time without the common challenges. Its intuitive design and SIS integration makes implementation and training a breeze. Make your flex time work for you. Visit myflexlearning.com/BE to learn more and receive $500 off your first year. That's myflexlearning.com/BE.